Perhaps I'm a case study of what happens in the federal government when we start on a tough problem. You'll recall that the president issued his first executive order in this area in 2009. It required essentially all federal agencies to engage in sustainability planning and adaptation planning. I was very new to DHS. This order came in. I'm a former judge. Didn't know a lot about climate change, and it became my responsibility. So at DHS and with the help of Admiral White, we turned very seriously to the question, should an agency like DHS even care about climate change? Now, in 2009, that was a serious question. We did not have a definitive consensus view within the department. So we had the hard work of answering that question and looking at each of our mission spaces to determine that we, in fact, should care deeply. I think you've seen a similar evolution in the national documents reflecting on this. 2010, there's a national security strategy makes a very strong statement about climate change. And then you see the QDR, the QHSR talking about climate change as a threat multiplier. And then you see a 2015 national security strategy pulling this out as one of the key threats to the United States. And then you get a report like this saying we really need to integrate this into all of our considerations. So there are challenges in bringing everyone along to understand the threat, because that's really where we have to start. Everyone has to recognize that there's a threat and this is something we need to do things about. I have been working on the second portion of this, as Jeff has mentioned. What do you do about it? How do you start really making choices that will make a difference to better prepare a nation, a fragile state, or even the United States to the impacts of climate change? And much of our focus has historically been on the mitigation, and there's less developed activity in the adaptation space. So this is new territory for many people across the federal government. And we've done a number of things with the through the president's executive orders, president very forward leaning on this, to take action within the United States. But two things have really been seminal in the international area, and they also grew out of the president's executive orders. After that first executive order, he issued in November 2013 an executive order creating a council for climate preparedness and resilience. And really, the design of that council was to take all of the mission-based Department of Energy, Department of Commerce, Department of Defense, DHS, all of them with their separate missions, and say, what do we need to do to build resilience to climate change? And that council has been meeting regularly. In one of the very first meetings, the international agencies said, we don't see ourselves enough in this, and we want to be a part of it, and we want to get working on how we can build resilience internationally. And that's how the executive order came about. The president signed last September an executive order that requires all of U.S. development work to be screened for climate resilience risks by, and we've called out this date for ourselves, October 1st of this year. So new projects will be screened across the federal government. And why is this so important? Well, if we're going to invest taxpayer dollars to help other countries, we need to make sure that those taxpayer dollars can withstand the impacts that are projected. And if we look at the historical impacts, of course, we will not be adequately prepared. If we just look at historical data on climate, as civil engineers will tell you and others, we need to have the projections. But when you get down to actually doing this, there are still major challenges. We don't have downscale data routinely available. That's true for the United States, and that's certainly true across the world. So when you get to a city trying to plan, or a nation state trying to plan how high do they need to build that new port, or what kind of steps do they need to take to protect that road, they may not have the necessary data, and it may be a pretty broad cut. That could be okay. I think Admiral White can tell you that there are comfort levels here. But we don't have that downscale data routinely available. The second thing is we don't have translators. We don't have the people who are experts in the impacts of climate change, what that means for how you build, where you build, what that means for fragile states. We simply don't have that cadre built yet of knowledgeable people who can consult and offer the advice. So when we screen for climate resilience anywhere, do we have the cadre of people to say, well, that means you need to do X if you have that risk? And we're still building that now. So the implementation portion of these will remain challenges, but I can tell you we're hard at work. A second area that we've done in the international is a public-private partnership with 8 partners. We just announced this several weeks ago. The American Red Cross, Asian Development Bank, ESRI, Google, Inter-American Development Bank, the SCOAL Global Threats Fund, and the UK government, and the United States government. And this is designed to provide climate services to developing nations so that they can better prepare and be more resilient to the impacts of climate change. That's taking all of the resources from those organizations and bringing them down so that a nation can pick projects, get the downscale data, get the necessary expertise to make the choices, and then move forward. And we have chosen 3 countries, Colombia, Ethiopia, and Bangladesh, as our first pilot projects, because we really need to learn how you do this. I don't think that there is consensus yet that anyone knows how to do it well. That's a wonderful thing in some ways, because no one can tell you, oh, we already tried that and it doesn't work. On the other hand, we're really at the front end of this, of trying to determine how we should move forward. We are making similar choices and efforts on the domestic side, and it is challenging to figure out what makes economic sense as we make continuing investments. And one place that we have chosen, and I think that we are continuing to focus on, is our infrastructure. Because as we make long-term investments on things that will be with us for 50 to 100 years, we need to make sure that those investments will last through the projected impacts. But I want to applaud this report because I think it brings together and synthesizes many of the challenges that we've seen. And it really reflects that if we don't think through how we are helping countries through the climate lens, think through their fragility risks posed by climate change and by independent factors, we really are at risk for not being able to achieve our goals, because that threat multiplier of climate change could knock aside all the important work, or much of the important work, that we're doing in this space. So I just want to applaud the leadership of the G7, as well as those who have been doing this report, because it certainly rang true to me in what we are experiencing here from the White House and formerly from the DHS perspective. So thank you.